This is Lord Aaron Essays. I'm Lord of the Thighs, Lord of the Skies, and soon enough I'll be Lord of the Minds.
This is Andrew here, and I'm the president of Planet Oathith.
Nate Dog.
Yeah, it's Jake.
It's Mike, and you're listening to the Five Wise Marks. Welcome to another episode of the Five Wise Marks. And this week, we are on a bit of a somber note. We have to celebrate the career of beautiful Bobby Eaton, who passed away this month, 62 years old.
He couldn't even collect Social Security.
God damn it, Turner.
Oh, you suck.
That's it. I'm out.
Yeah, you're out.
I'm out. Fuck it.
Better leave your top five.
No, supposedly one of the nicest guys just in life in general.
Nobody has a bad word to say about him.
And he can't say a word.
Yeah, well, according to Jim Ross, as we found out watching some of these old matches.
He'll let you know that he can't speak a lick of English.
He's a mutant.
A mutant?
Yeah, I'm a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's where Ronda Rousey got it from.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk a little bit about Bobby Eaton, his place in the wrestling world, his influence on the wrestling world. We're going to go over a couple of matches that we watched in depth. Just three of them. We'll go over those as we go throughout the show. And then wrap it up with top five tag team wrestlers.
So, spoiler alert.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby Eaton might be in there.
He might not.
Might not. If you're a certain buddy that's not here, he probably wouldn't be.
Well.
It would just be Bart Gunn and Owen and Davey. And Owen and Davey again.
And then
Owen.
And then Davey.
And then Davey.
Yeah. And then, you know.
The Guardian Angel.
And Al Snow. Yeah.
Head cheese.
Okay. Well, Steve Blackman might be on the list. It would be the only Blackman on the list.
Oh, Steve Black Shelton, man?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, I mean, obviously, we were not expecting. I mean, some of the times when wrestler passes away, it's like, okay, they're, you know, in their 70s, in their 80s. We kind of expect it. You know, like, it was sad when Harley Race passed away, but he was much older.
Or DiNucci just recently as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, with Bobby Eaton, he was only 62 years old.
And while we know he was going through some health concerns, it's still a shock to the system where, you know, you see a guy like that who's kind of dropped out of the limelight in pro wrestling, and then, you know, as well as he's respected in the world, the latest news is of his death, and that's something you just don't want to hear.
Yeah. Wasn't his wife that just recently passed away as
like
well?
Like 3 or 4 or 5 weeks prior.
Yes.
Yeah. It varied another, you know. Do you think possibly her passing led to his passing?
There's always a saying that with
right,
the older,
and that's kind of where yes. I'm getting at is.
I mean, he might not have been fighting as hard as he would have.
Kind of just lost the will to live.
Yeah.
It's sad.
It is sad. Sucks. I mean, and like I said, nobody's ever said a bad word about Bobby Eaton. And he was not one of those guys that was, like, very heavy into the drugs and the partying, that you would expect maybe to go younger. You know, he was not one of those guys, so it's
very much against the grain of the 80s type, 90s type guys, where they are popping pills, drinking, smoking.
Yeah.
The dude is all about business and caring and respecting his peers.
And very much a natural in the business, too.
Natural as can be.
Yeah. I mean, as Cornette will say, I mean, Bobby Eaton just needed to see a thing, and then he could do it. He didn't have to, you know, talk it through. He just, if he could visualize it in his head, he could do it.
And another one of those things, too, is he was so good and so natural at it, to the point where he couldn't explain to other wrestlers how, like, he couldn't be a trainer to people, and he's tried to do that.
Yeah, he said, just do it.
Just do it.
You just do it.
And sometimes that's just the best kind of people.
Pass or fail.
Yeah. Like, Ted DiBiase couldn't do it. He's such a natural at it, too. But he just, when you have a feel for it and you can't teach it, that's okay, too.
Well, I mean, in a lot of sports, some of the best athletes are terrible coaches for that exact reason. It's like, you just do it. Well, how?
Well,
you just run really fast and you do it.
You just go on the top rope and drop a leg.
Yeah, yeah, you just do it.
How do you not know how to do that?
Yeah. You just watch what I do and now you do it.
Well, here's a question I want to pose you guys. Do you think Bobby Eaton grew up in the wrong era of wrestling? Do you think he gets his due?
I don't think he gets his due because a lot of people remember him from like the later WCW after the Blue Buds, and he was a jobber to the stars. I think that's what a lot of people around our age are going to remember him as. Because not with the Midnights. They're going to remember him as.
It's almost like a tale of two careers.
Yeah, after
especially the, after 90, you know.
After 95 and the Blue Bloods run with Regal, is basically is a jobber to the stars.
I mean, I would say I think with many fans, he gets his credit. I mean, the people who know and would go back and watch, you know, that 84 through 91, 92 run of where he was really at his top. I mean, this is a guy who should be, the Midnight Express should be in the WWE Hall of Fame. I know they weren't big in WWE.
That's another thing, too, is a lot of these people who are growing up now, like, this guy, as great as he was, right, correct me if I'm wrong, never stepped foot in the WWF ring, right?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
Isn't that weird? Like, for as long as the Fed has been around, everyone's had a cup of coffee with the WWF.
I mean, they almost jumped in 86. Dennis, Bobby, and Jim all had a meeting with Vince McMahon, and they almost jumped, but they didn't. They got a new contract offer from Crockett and stayed. But, Bobby Eaton was, after his couple territory runs, it was Crockett, WCW, the whole way.
Imagine those 87 matches. He had Bulldogs there. He had Heart Foundation.
Demolition. Later, you'd get Arn and Tully again.
Rockers,
yeah. I mean, there's...
Owen and Davey.
Yeah. I mean, don't Owen and Davey in 87. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And the Smoking Guns, too.
Yeah. So. And Owen and Yoko.
Jacob and Eli Blue?
Yeah, Blue Brothers.
Beverly?
Beverly Brothers, too. Yeah, I mean, they could have stayed around until 92 and wrestled the Beverly Brothers.
So, you know, a lot of teams they could have worked with.
Yeah, clearly. In 87, Fed.
There's my guy.
So many. Mike Sanders?
He's above average.
Yeah. And so the thing is, with Bobby Eaton, this is a guy who's in so many different tag teams. I mean, there was obviously his first Midnight Express run with Dennis Condrey. Then you had Stan Lane. Then you had him after breaking up. He teamed up with, was it Zbyszko first? Or was it Arn and Zbyszko?
Arn and Zbyszko.
And then it was Arn and Eaton.
Or vice versa. It was one or the other.
Well, no, I know Arn and Eaton tagged together. Yes. They were tag team champions together.
So were Arn and Larry.
Yeah.
Okay. The Enforcers.
So, yeah. And then, obviously, he had the run with Regal and Taylor in the Blue Bloods. I mean, this is a guy who tagged with a lot of different partners, and they were a lot of good combinations.
Yeah. And you wouldn't think Eaton and Regal would work. They worked.
Yeah. I mean, the gimmick might have been a little weird for Bobby Eaton, Earl of Eaton, but...
Sir.
Yeah, but, I mean, in the ring, it worked.
It makes sense with Regal.
Yeah, I mean...
Eaton can adapt and adjust and play along with just about, if not any style that he came across in the ring. Just go as one of his many great things about him and Bobby Eaton.
Nate? And then you also had the issue with that Smoky Mountain WCW run where he teamed up with the Heavenly Bodies. So you have Stan Lane... Dr. Tom Pritchard and Bobby Eaton all together against the Rock and Rolls and Arn Anderson. So, I mean, there were so many different
combinations. I'd buy a ticket to that to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like a group of like 12 guys there for like 10 years that just switched and just tagged in three ways and six ways and cornets in the mix. It's a lot of fun.
It all worked.
Yeah.
Because that means you're a who's who of workers that can adapt to any style, whether it be a little high-flying, the Stan Lane with his little karate, or with Regal and the mat, just the adaptations.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that Bobby Eaton could do. So many different people that he could team with. And he made everybody he teamed with better. Like he complimented them, and he could be another big thing. He could be a heel or a babyface. Which you'll see with some people, they really only can slot into one role effectively, whereas Bobby Eaton was able to do both.
And speaking of a babyface Bobby Eaton.
Yeah, I was saying, we watched nothing but babyface Bobby Eaton matches.
Which is out of the ordinary for him. But.
And we didn't watch a Midnights and Rock and Roll either.
Yeah. We just kind of picked three matches that stood out to us. And, we'll review those three matches. But it is interesting that we never got kind of that classic Midnight Express, like 85 through, 88 run before they turned babyface. You know, we had just nothing but later Bobby Eaton, where he happened to be a babyface at the time.
Thanks, Peacock.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would have definitely watched some other Bobby Eaton wrestling matches, but
it's kind of hard to find things on the cock.
He can't say that.
Oh, Peacock?
No, that's you can't Peacock. Say the.
Oh, the Peacock.
There we go.
Got it. NBC Peacock. Here's a commercial on Peacock for Peacock.
About because Peacock.
That's what Peacock does when you're paying for Peacock.
Peacock says know your role and yes, watch this commercial.
Exactly.
And hashtag Peacock.
Yes. So let's go ahead. We'll talk about our matches and we'll move into those. First match we chose was from Clash of the Champions 15. So this was summer 1991. And we have Bobby Eaton challenging WCW champion
Spartacus.
Checking my notes. Spartacus. Oh, I'm sorry. Ric Flair.
No, it's Spartacus.
No, I have Spartacus written down.
Me too. But this is actually one of the last matches that Ric Flair had in WCW before he took that big gold belt and took it up to New York.
Which we reviewed on Survivor Series 91.
Yes, see our Survivor Series 1991 episode for
you that. You could already tell in Flair's face he was leaving.
Yeah.
You could already tell. Which I think kind of dragged the match down just a hair.
So much so that did he not want to put Eaton over here? Isn't that the story?
The story that I have heard is that Ric Flair wanted to put Bobby Eaton over, and Jim Herd said no. Even though Flair was basically out the door.
And couple that with the fact that he wants to help put Eaton over as a singles guy, guy that he respects immensely. From a guy, Ric Flair, who has all the respect from all of his peers, respects a guy in Bobby Eaton, who was known as a tag guy up to that point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 2 out of 3 fall match as well.
Yes, it was 2 out of 3 falls match. Only went 15 minutes. We're thinking there might have been some TV time issues there.
Yeah, I think so. They could have just left that at one fall and they would have been fine.
Yeah, they probably could have. But they wanted to do the best 2 out of 3 because then it could help with Bobby Eaton because it kind of makes him look a little better with the first fall. But yeah, starting this match off, first thing I wrote down, Spartacus haircut.
I wrote Spartacus music.
Very, 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 yeah. The music was, I'm assuming that's a Peacock issue where maybe they don't have whatever
the
version Flair was using at the time. But yeah, he had that real, real short haircut.
Which is like, when I grew up on Flair, is what I was used to seeing first, like Nitro Flair. So seeing him with like the longer hair is something newer to me.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know why I wrote this, but I wrote, this is WCW. I'm assuming it was because of the aesthetic with the high ramp that goes right up to the ring, the big steel WCW set.
It's like half Nitro, half end of WCW.
Yeah, the black, blue, and yellow robes.
Well, I think they said, I think Shivani said, this is WCW. It's like,
oh, yes,
I made a comment. I was like, what is it, the WWF? Like,
yeah, you're correct. That's why I wrote it down.
Of course it's WCW.
We're not Memphis, pal.
Yeah, Shivani literally Knoxville. Says after a move, this is WCW. Okay.
We get it. We know.
Cool, I thought I was watching ECW. Yeah. I
mean, another news, water is wet.
Yeah.
I don't think it is, though, really.
You know what? I'm sick of this.
You know, I'm out. I'm done. Fuck it.
I'm done.
Water's
all right,
dry.
Leave the top 5.
Yeah. But as the match started, one thing I noticed real early is they were laying into some of these strikes. There were some taters being thrown.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got down here Eaton's punches.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Thing of a beauty. There.
Yeah, that right hand.
Best right hand in the business.
Well, he gets that sound on it that people now do with the thigh slap, but he was clearly not slapping the thigh. So I think I figured out how he did it. I don't really want to expose anybody's business, but it took a lot of watching to see through. But as he's going through, like his other arm comes up and kind of maybe hits the...
It's a tricep or something?
Hits the bicep as he's going up, I think. We're going to have to ask Maynard. He might have a better idea on that. But that's what I was looking at.
Well, you know, I was listening to Jim Cornette's... show on Bobby, which is a very good listen, sad listen. He was saying for a long time, Cornette's a very smart man in pro wrestling. He couldn't figure out how Bobby was doing it. It just goes to show us more how great Bobby Eaton really was in the ring. A guy like Cornette, basically, he's not trying to work Cornette, but Corny can't figure it out at the same time, and Bobby's not letting him know either.
Nobody's watched more Bobby Eaton up close than
Jim Cornette.
I mean, he was literally at ringside with him for 5-6 years every night.
The best thing I love is Flair does the drop down. Eaton drops an elbow. Love it. Love that spot.
Yeah, so they do an Irish whip, and Flair drops down. You're supposed to go over him and keep going, and he's going to get you on the rebound. But no, Bobby Eaton stops, drops the elbow on the back of the head. Just a nice little twist on a common spot.
Smart thing to do.
Yeah. It's something you don't normally see. And then Eaton was also working the arm heavy this match, which I noticed. It's kind of a theme throughout the early part of the match.
I love the way he'd roll through on it, too, and kind of get a little more torque on it.
Yeah. Yeah, he had the arm like kind of wrapped around his leg, and he'd flip over, roll, and he'd roll Ric Flair with him, kind of like an alligator roll.
Yeah, when it was happening, we were talking to each other like, oh, this is different. This is, what is this? Because that's a movie you don't see in 2021. It probably wouldn't fly in 2021.
It looked like a leg key lock, kind of.
Yeah, in a post-MMA world, I think it's a little easy to see through. But you got to remember, UFC didn't come around for another 4 years after this. So, I mean, people weren't really smart to that kind of a submission.
They see a submission, like, and they're like, that's got to hurt.
Yeah.
Really, if you want to dissect, if you're watching it closely, it's not anything, but it's the visual
Flair,
of it.
Flair sold it like $1 million.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then one of the big things with this match is just trying to get Bobby Eaton over. So first fall, clean Alabama jam off the top, 1-2-3. Bobby Eaton goes over in the first fall, up 1-0.
I like that first fall. I like the Alabama jam. That's probably Bobby's most famous move.
Yeah, I was saying either that or the rocket launcher as United Express.
And, you know, he got one on the champ from his best move. Yeah.
Clean.
Yes. And the thing is, they actually rang the bell, and the winner of the first fall is Bobby Eaton.
So thanks, Capetta.
And then they get a 30-second reprieve.
Yep. And then...
Flair sold his neck like money during that, too.
Exactly. Yeah, Flair didn't get to his feet until after the 30 seconds rang, and then he got up in the corner. They go back and forth for a little while more before you eventually get Bobby Eaton on the top rope, and Flair comes and falls on the ropes, but Eaton's just a quarter second, half second late jumping, so it's kind of like a little rough timing on that because his back was turned to Flair, so he didn't see Flair hit the rope. So that was a little rough, but that leads to the second fall, which is...
A count-out.
Yeah, Flair goes over by count-out, so they're still protecting Bobby a little bit here.
Because he hurt his knee.
Yeah.
And that's the theme of the rest of the match.
Sets up the story for the third fall.
Yeah. Exactly. And so from there on out, Flair's doing his traditional Flair, chop block, working the leg, and eventually goes for a figure four and gets rolled up. Which the fans pop for because they're thinking, oh, Bobby's going to win.
And I pop for it, too. I like, it doesn't matter who's doing that. I love that sequence. Because more times than not, you might get a fall out of it.
Yeah. And, I mean, the fans got into it. And, fortunately, it didn't quite happen for Eaton there. And, eventually, after several times working the ropes.
Oh, God.
I mean, Flair was definitely using those ropes to his advantage on the figure four. He eventually gets Bobby Eaton to go out and not submit, but take a pinfall out of the figure four leg lock for the final.
I didn't love that last fall.
It was kind of rough.
Nick Patrick, I think, kind of took...
I think Nick Patrick was not great in
his
match.
His positioning in this match, a lot of the times, where it's comical.
Yeah.
Where, like, Flair grabbed onto that top rope for leverage in the first figure four he was going for. And Patrick just turns his back, like, and then it was just...
Saw it, then turned his back.
It was
It was
bad.
The spot. Oh, this is what's going on.
Yeah. And then he eventually turns around for no reason to catch him. Because he knew he had to catch him.
Yeah, that was the spot that was playing.
Yeah. And, I mean, honestly, this was not as good as I hoped it was going to be.
Well, we had thought, we were looking for a different Clash match. So.
I think it was actually a Saturday night match from 1990. But, I mean, good luck finding any of that Saturday night stuff on the network. It's very hit or miss what's on there with Peacock. So, we weren't going to be able to dig for it. So, we just found the first, Flair-Eaton match we could find, which was the Clash one.
And it was still a really good match.
It was
good. Get
it was good. Yeah. It wasn't...
So, what are you guys' ratings for it?
You go ahead first.
I went 2.75.
That's what I got. 2.75.
See, I was a little lower. I went 2.5. So, all in the same
range. Well,
you're
way off.
I know.
What did Meltzer give it? Now, fuck him.
That's good point.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah. Stall for time.
Yeah, so, yeah, it just, it seemed like they were a little, I don't think Flair was totally in it.
I don't think his heart was in it, and I think, as much as he loves Bobby Eaton, he would have loved to just put Bobby over and just, I'm not sure if that would have made Bobby a star. Even getting the belt would, Bobby would have a lot of work to do still, but I think Flair was wanting him to do that.
Eaton would have been the ultimate transition champion because we knew Luger was going to go over at the Bash.
Like that was their next Hogan. No, I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, it was.
No, I'm kidding.
And then he did nothing with the belt. He wasted time until he went to the WBF.
So, he gave them a big old 3.5.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I can't get behind show, that one.
He
but...
also gave 3 matches a dud rating. One that was a half star. One that was a quarter star. Another that was a star and 3/4. Another that was a star and 3/4. Another was a star and a half. And one that was just a 1 star.
Oof.
Okay, so according to him, that was the best match on the card.
Second, we did give 1 4-star match to the Steiners versus Hirohase and Masachono because there's 2 Japanese guys.
He's a fanboy of the Japanese wrestling.
Yeah, for some reason, he wasn't a big fan of Arn and Barry Windham versus Brian Pillman and El Gigante. I don't understand why.
I can't get behind why.
Yeah, I don't understand what he was thinking there.
Who was the best worker in that match?
El Giant.
Yeah.
I hate Giants.
Andrade El Gigante.
I could probably beat him up, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's been dead for like 15 years.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, he's supposed to be the original Yeti, too, by the way. So, yeah, he's already wrapped up.
Ooh! Nate the Zinger.
It's still Baron Hayes.
You know what? Fuck it. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm done. All right. Next match. We went to Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton from Super Brawl 1 for the WCW World Television Championship. And
everything was the same, the ring entrance and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a couple months apart. This was, what, 3 months before?
Yeah, something like that.
Before the other match. So, yeah, we had a lot of the same...
Bobby's wearing the same gear, which, honestly, like, not that we know Bobby Eaton, but it makes sense for Bobby. He probably only has maybe 2 sets of tights.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of
those. He's got 1 for tag, 1 for singles.
Yeah, exactly it.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely in his blue era of tights with this one. But right off the bat, one thing I noticed of this is when Bobby hits that right hand, he does it a couple times this match. When he hits that right hand punch, Arn sells it like it's a gunshot. The first one, the gum comes out and everything. Like, that was good.
Yeah, it was a hot start for sure.
I love the headlock into the head scissors.
Yes.
I love 3-4 times roll through instant head scissors. Love that instant, just, I already know your counter. Yeah. I already know what you're doing. I got the counter.
And Ross was actually talking this up. He said, nothing that either one of these guys is going to do is going to surprise the other one. They've got them so well scouted from so many years of being in the same company. So, I mean, they really built that up of, like, he knows every trick that Arn's got. Arn knows every trick Bobby's got because they've been wrestling in the same division for so long. Another thing I noticed, and I just had to point out, typical of old WCW matches or WCW rings, bloody mat.
Yep.
Of course, got to be blood on the mat. It's not a WCW show.
Which is total opposite of the competition at this point.
Yeah, no kidding.
Which is only one getting color is Hogan.
No blade jobs, pal. Just ask Flair.
Yeah.
When he went there. No blade jobs.
Or Brett.
Hey, Brett got away with it.
Yeah, he did.
He's so good. But the next thing I got written down here is and it's a little bit of foreshadowing, we got 2 tag guys wrestling as singles.
Yeah. Exactly.
And boy, did it work. I mean, these guys worked their ass off.
They both know how to do the little things. Just the little
things. Arn's selling the way he's moving his body, the way he's... Like, there was a turnbuckle spot. He kind of... Yeah. He, like, Bret Harted it, if you know what I'm talking about.
Did the sternum bump.
Yeah.
He came off the top rope for an axe handle, and Bobby Eaton got him with a punch to the gut, and then he actually did a front flip as the sell to it. It was awesome.
I love that spot.
Yeah. I mean, it makes no sense to bump like that, to move like that, but I don't know why. I pop for it every time.
It's a good-looking visual is what it is. It's a really good-looking visual.
And I just love that there's that double axe handle. Arn didn't turn, but Bobby still jumped anyways.
Yeah.
Love that. You're not waiting for him to turn for the counter, possibly for the punch. Just Arn started to turn, Bobby already was going.
Yeah. I mean, if he's there in range for you to be able to hit him, just hit him.
Just do it. That's what makes sense.
Yes.
You're not sitting posing, waiting for 30 seconds.
Or the cooperation that you see in 2021. Or really, I mean, the last 10 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, now, yeah. They would
wait for them to turn around.
They would go and hold hands.
Do a chop, land on their back on the rope.
Yeah, exactly.
Get up.
Like, don't do that shit. Like, you want to hurt your opponent, you want to win. Do what you got to do. Do what makes sense. Do what's right.
Speaking of things that don't make sense, though. The finish? How about that run-in? So, Bobby Eaton's got him set up. He does that great swinging neckbreaker, picks up Arn, slams him, goes to the top rope. Next thing you know, Barry Windham's just running down the entrance ramp, and Brian Pillman's right behind him. So you hear this like, oh, they're gone.
It was all like a 3-second flash.
Yeah, if you blink, you literally would have missed it.
You know what happened during that 3 seconds? The finish!
Yeah, and this is the other great part.
Yeah.
So Bobby hits the Alabama Jam. 1, 2, the camera cuts away.
Because what's more important than the fucking finish of the match?
Barry Windham and Brian Pillman running away.
Fuck Barry Windham.
Yeah, Barry Windham in Super Brawl does not have a good history with you.
I don't want to see his face or his body. I got to make it very clear now.
Yeah. He does not want to see Barry Windham at Super Brawl.
Ever again.
So next time we watch Super Brawl, Barry Windham's there.
He would probably be main eventing.
He's out. He's out. You're done. You're walking away.
I quit. Fuck it.
You quit. You're driving home.
There's my top five.
All the way back to Yale.
All the way back upstairs.
What do we got for our ratings on this? Because, I mean, ultimately, the match was really good, even if the finish kind of,
One thing I want to say, we got Arn's spine buster.
Yep. Yes, that was a good near fall.
So good.
And a kick out from Bobby.
And a kick out.
A clean kick out on the spine buster.
It wasn't the cleanest looking spine buster.
It was not 100%
perfect. It was great.
It was very good, but it was like a 4-star on the Arn scale, maybe?
Which is better than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, better than anybody else's spine buster, but not Arn's best spine buster.
Well, you know not what? Anybody's.
Oh. Well, I taught Arn that.
I definitely... My spine buster is better than everybody's. I'm not even on the same scale. So, you just rate Arn the highest because he's the only one that's... Mine's so high rated, you don't even rate it.
It's overrated.
And you know what, Johnny Ace and Bruce Pritchard, if you can hear this, I'm going to get your ass.
Oh, what?
I'm going over. Oh. You might have cut some of my NXT guys, but I'm going over.
I'm
going
to call Vince.
You call Vince. I'm going to call Stephanie.
Vince!
Stephanie! So we'll see how that goes with Stephanie and Vince when they get into the argument.
Rematch of No Mercy?
No Mercy 03. Yeah.
So I went 3.25 on this one.
I definitely liked it more than the Flair match. I have it at 3.5.
I went 3.
So we're all in the same ballpark.
Interestingly enough, Nate takes the job this time because he went the same exact rating as David Meltzer.
Oh, yep, I lose.
Yeah, well, 3.25. I lose. That's definitely.
I think I would have went 3.5, but that finish kind of.
Yeah, the finish really kind of took it down for me a little bit, too. I was going to ready to write 3.5 until the finish.
So we had a third match.
Then brings us to our third match, another Bobby Eaton babyface match.
But he's in a tag.
And this is one that, I mean, we've heard a lot about this from Cornette's podcast.
Yes.
He's talked a lot about this, which is the Midnight Express versus the Midnight Express. So the original Midnight Express.
What do you mean by that?
There's two guys, and they're fighting each other.
Oh, one guy's name is Midnight Express.
Yeah.
And the other guy's name is Midnight Express.
Yes.
That makes sense now.
Winner keeps the gimmick.
Yeah.
So, Nate, why don't you kind of give us the backdrop of what's going on here in 1980?
Well, we had what? We had Cornette's Midnight Express.
Which consists of who?
Bobby Eaton and Sweet Stan Lane.
Beautiful Bobby Eaton.
Beautiful Bobby Eaton. And we also had Paul E. Dangerously's. Midnight Express, Randy Rhodes,
Ravishing Randy Rhodes.
Yes, and Loverboy Dennis.
Yeah, you better know Dennis Condrey. You and I would have to fight.
And I'll call the match.
Yeah.
Call it.
I'm out.
First thing I wrote down is Cornette as a babyface. Wow. That's something, isn't it? I mean, he is riling up that crowd.
Dude, Cornette was doing Cornette things out there.
And the crowd was going nuts for it. It was like the same stuff he did as a heel.
I was just gonna make that point. He's threatening with the racket, or he's hitting people with the racket. And now he's getting the pop from the same thing he's doing.
Yeah.
From what it used to be, he's getting heat.
Yeah, because he's doing it to the heels now, so it's okay.
I love Paul Lee ringing the bell. Hello, interference, yeah. Hello. That was a nice little touch, too. Yeah.
So, right off the bat, maybe a minute into the match, and Dennis Condrey gets thrown out right in front of referee Teddy Long, and Cornette just full-on just whacks him with the tennis racket, and it made like a gunshot sound, and Teddy Long just didn't catch it. It cut away so we didn't see, like, maybe he got distracted. But, man, that sound is unmistakable.
You can hear the thwack.
Yeah. And then the second time Cornette did it to Randy Rose, that's when Paul Lee went over and starts just ringing the bell. And Jim Ross says, we're not going to acknowledge that Paul Lee is the one ringing the bell here. This is not the timekeeper, stating that it's an unofficial ringing
the bell.
It's
a good heel tactic by Paul Lee.
Yeah.
It goes to his genius, too. Like, hello, DQ, Teddy.
And he's too cowardly to go over and try and stop Cornette.
Yeah.
So he has to do it that way, like the backhanded way.
There was so much babyface shine.
Yeah,
it really was.
One criticism I would have of this match, probably the first 6-7 minutes, is all Cornette in the Midnight Express just dominating this match. Just dominating the offense of the match with the babyface team.
They'll get one reversal, go for the monkey flip, and it's like, oh, I'm going to hang on, take the bump.
Yeah, that actually came in a little bit later in the match.
Yeah.
I want to bring up when we get there, because that is a really cool spot. One of the things I wrote is, while the babyfaces are winning, the fans are into it, though.
Yes.
The difference between an 88 Jim Crockett / WCW crowd to that 91 crowd is just night and day.
This is a second match on the card, too, so it's not even...
It's not a main event match.
It's not even high build, and this is Midnight versus Midnight, so this has some ring to it.
Which, the other two matches we watched were a semi-main and a main event.
Which has significantly less impact on the crowd.
Yeah, than this second from opening match on Starrcade 88. But, there was so much more fan interest and so many more fans there in 88 than there was,
This was at the Omni, I believe, correct? Yeah. Double check that.
Anything WCW, we can just go ahead and just...
No, it was at Norfolk Scope.
Oh, it was at Scope. Well, that's a big...
But another big arena.
That's another big...
WCW stronghold that's a big, there.
Yeah, that was a town that was very heavily associated with WCW in that area. That was in that Mid-Atlantic territory. But then we had... Eventually, this is the first time that Dennis Condrey and Stan Lane get into the ring together. Condrey walks up and he just sticks out his hand for a handshake to Stan Lane, who just turns around and kicks him right in the gut.
Karate kick?
Karate.
A martial arts kick.
Yeah, so it was a martial arts kick, I believe.
Martial arts.
Because he has educated feet.
Thanks, Jim Ross.
And nobody gets higher than Bobby Eaton. As Jim Ross said in 1988, giving up two of the future Rob Van Dam's catchphrases. Yeah.
A young Rob Van Dam took notes.
From Battle Creek, Michigan.
Yeah, just like John Cena was taking notes on Stan Lane's chin lock.
You say John Cena?
Yeah, John Cena.
Yeah, that looked pretty awful on camera.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're in the crowd, you're not noticing
it. That should have been a side view.
But tighten that up, Stan Lane, if you're hearing this.
Yeah, he's just busy looking like deformed Lex Luger.
Yes, he looks like a melted down version of Lex Luger, but another little interesting tidbit I wrote down is Teddy Long's hairdo. It's worth mentioning. He's balding on top, but he's still holding on for hope in the sides.
Well, and you know what? I want to say it was Starrcade 90 that he lost a hair match.
As he should have.
It got that shaved off.
It took two more fucking years.
It was something. I think it was Starrcade 90 because it wouldn't have been 89. But yeah, there was definitely a hair match where it was him and another manager putting up their hair, and Doom lost.
God damn it, Doom.
Yeah.
He's got a scam package.
But then we get to the point where Randy Rose goes for a monkey flip, and Stan Lane just holds onto the top rope.
He's like, I'm good.
Randy Rose takes the bump. I thought that was kind of funny.
That's a good spot.
Yeah,
that's
not something you don't see anymore because nobody ever does monkey flips anymore. It was a cool little spot.
And some of those little things.
Rob Van Dam does.
Who?
I'm sorry.
Does that guy have educated feet?
Yes.
No one gets as high.
Yeah. Now he's got the Val Venus gimmick.
Yes.
Hello.
But then we get to the finish of this match. And Paulie, I mean, this is a big scrum. Everybody's running over. Paulie comes in and hits Stan Lane with the cell phone, which Randy Rose gets to cover. And eventually one. Teddy gets back over. One, two, and he goes down for three, but he stops and grabs the cell phone that's in the ring. And Teddy picks it up and just holds it like it's a torch in his hands. Like it's a pro wrestling torch in his
hands. Keller pops. Yeah.
Apter was there too, wasn't he?
Yeah, Bill Apter was there. And he's walking around just holding it. And the crowd's going nuts because they know this means that, you know, they're not going to get away with their devious plans. And what ends up
Rose
happening...
Rose sold that brilliantly, too.
Yeah, he was freaking out. I mean, it was great. He was on his knees. No, no, no. That didn't happen. No. And he, as he gets up, we get a high-low spot of Stan coming with the crossbody, Bobby Eaton coming with the trip down low. But as JR says, double goozle!
Total elimination!
That's a double goozle. I don't know where... I would love to have somebody ask Jim Ross what he was thinking, where he was getting this from.
Well, goddamn. Her. Sassafras. Fuck you,
Mike. There's two people and one person around the neck, therefore double the goozle.
Well, there's two people, double goozle.
Because I always thought double goozle would be like when Undertaker gets two jobbers and he chokeslams both of them at the same time.
That's a high low.
That's a total elimination. That's total elimination. Yeah. You didn't say it. You got to say it like Joey Styles.
Total elimination! Total elimination! Oh, my God! Yeah, maybe we'll not do Joey Styles. I mean, we do have Joey Styles here, because you've knocked out the self-proclaimed John Bradshaw Layfield of your cousin.
Yes.
Yeah. Wrath knocked him out.
Ooh, get me hard up, okay.
So what do we got on the rating on this one?
I went 3.5.
I did as well. I had 3.5.
That's a clean sweep of 3.5.
Whoa!
And
what did Meltzer say?
3.25, because he's a jobber.
Fuck you, Meltzer.
Exactly.
I'm a Keller guy anyway.
So
give me some after.
Three different Bobby Eaton matches. Three very different feels to them, even though they were all babyface matches.
Three very good matches.
I mean, yeah, the worst match we had in like the 2.5 range. It's like a C.
With Ric Flair,
yeah,
of all people. Like, that just goes to show... Find me a bad Bobby Eaton match. I dare you.
Hard to do.
Because you're not going to find it.
I mean, you and I were not happy with Super Brawl 3 tag match, and we still gave it like 2.5.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
that was. And we were like, it's bad by the standards set by these great workers, but it wasn't bad.
Exactly. You can't find a bad match. Yep.
Like, it's bad only because you expect much better out of those two. It just, for whatever reason, didn't work, didn't have the time.
Well, I'm going to blame Flair.
I'm going to blame Jim Herd.
I'm going with Herd.
Yeah.
Yeah, damn it.
I mean, he wanted him to be Spartacus, so I'm going to have to blame Jim Herd on that one.
What about Heyman's bumping?
Yeah. I wrote that down.
Cornette was putting on a clinic as far as manager bumping skills.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Cornette was all over the place. The Charlotte Hornets.
God damn, that's funny. Larry Johnson.
Cornets, I mean, especially in that North Carolina, Jim Crockett territory, the Hornets.
The Hornets, yeah. Nice save.
So you call Stacy, she's the Hornet.
sin.
So, but no, Cornette was all that's over the place this match. I mean, he was bumping, he was, where with the racket, he was doing everything. And then Paulie gets in, and not quite as...
Everything he's doing is great until he gets in the ring.
Yeah. He looked very lost in the ring when he's trying to put the boots on Cornette. It was not natural to him. He's much more natural as an antagonist, as a talker, than he was in the ring, for sure.
But it was he still took a great bump.
And it's cool to see Cornette and Heyman in 88. Like, we know these guys from later on, too. And to know that they worked together... against each
early
on like that is
very early in Cornette's career. I mean, not Cornette's career. Very early in Heyman / Paulie Dangerously's career. I think he only had a year in Memphis,
something like that.
Before
yeah.
this, yeah.
Well, he was a photographer for a long time too, like Cornette. But as far as in the business, you're probably.
I mean,
right.
He's a photographer as like a teenager, but like
for
as a WWF, manager.
WWF,
yeah. Yeah, because I remember that picture he had with like Grand Wizard and not the racist one.
Like 82.
Hayes.
Which yeah, we got to review all these Tuesday Night Titans here pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yes. Every single week. In one night.
In one night.
Yeah.
Tuesday Night Titans.
A.K.A. TNT.
Yeah.
It's Dynamite.
It is Dynamite.
It is Rampage.
Oh.
It's probably better than Dynamite.
It's better than Dynamite. I mean, when you see Adrian Adonis, Dick Murdoch walking around New York City with Mean Gene.
With Mean Gene knocking on random doors, talking to random homeless people.
Yep. That's great TV, right?
It is. That's pure gold.
Yeah. But now to the main event. Top 5 tag team wrestlers of all time. So I'm going to kind of lay out what I mean by this, which is somebody who is most well known as a tag team wrestler. So it can be somebody who has had a little bit of single success,
yep.
But their tag team run is what they're known for. So for example, you can't use Shawn Michaels because yes, he was a tag team wrestler, but not known as a tag team wrestler. I mean, yes,
you would already get a fight from somebody here.
I mean, yeah. Let's see. Yeah. He tagged with Marty Jannetty. He tagged with Diesel. He won the tag titles with Diesel.
Stone Cold.
He tagged with Stone Cold. He tagged with John Cena. Won the tag team titles with John Cena. He was actually tag team champion at WrestleMania with John Cena. So maybe he does count.
Maybe Aaron is right.
Yeah. I mean, well, no, actually.
You shut your mouth.
Don't ever say that again.
Cut that.
Yeah. Cut.
We'll cut it on post.
But yeah, somebody who's most well-known as a tag team wrestler, like Brian Clark and Brian Adams on Chronic here in Starrcade 2000. Clearly, both going to be on this list.
And my list.
Number 5, Nate, if you want to kick us off with one of Chronic.
It's not, but it's unfortunately one of Hayes's. It's Billy Gunn.
Are you an ass man?
I'm an ass man. Well, here's the thing. Came in as Smoking Guns, had a good run.
Yeah.
New Age Outlaws, argue, probably one of the more over tag teams of all time. Billy and Chuck is just hilarious. And Billy Gunn, well known as a tag team wrestler. I put Billy Gunn at number 5.
Yeah, but he was a great single star at King of the Ring.
Yeah, that job randomly to Godfather 2 weeks before because
what
why?
About SummerSlam 1999 against The Rock?
Don't yeah, two weeks later he won the tag titles. Enough said. Billy Gunn, number 5.
Love to love him. You love to kick him. You love to stick him. And the best surprise is always sneaking from mine because he's a tag man. Whoa. Number 5, Turner.
Ricky Morton.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Ricky Morton.
He's the guy who we all know from that tag team, the Rock and Roll Express. No one really talks about Robert Gibson. He's
What's wrong with Hoot?
What's up? I like Hoot Gibson. I mean, the guy just pure fire in the ring.
Still is.
Yeah. His hair hasn't changed in 45 years. He still thinks it's over because you know what? It is over
it
still,
is over
pal.
Over here in Michigan, that's for sure.
I'd watch a Rock and Roll Express tag match right now, live, in person.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The guy's still going, too. I don't know. You can't beat Ricky Morton on this list.
Well, four
maybe
people.
Four.
I mean,
four
people, man. You can't beat him. He's not number 1, but you can't beat him.
Well, I know he is number 1.
Yeah, my number 5.
He's going reverse.
My number 5, Shelton Benjamin. I mean, obviously, he had the tag team Haas and Benjamin, Team Angle, world's greatest tag team. Says it right there. But he also tagged with Cedric Alexander. I mean, this is a guy who has won tag team gold in WWE in, you know, from as far as 2003 to 2021. I mean, and he's tag teamed all over the world. Did have a little bit of a singles run, but I mean, I think most people would consider him a tag guy.
No.
No. He won the IC title. He beat Triple H. Yeah, he beat Triple H.
Because I allowed it.
He's the greatest singles wrestler of all time. Hall of Famer.
What you got, number 4, Nate?
It's a Rick, but it's Rick Steiner.
Okay. Ooh. Wow.
A lot of people know Big Papa Pump and Rick Steiner. His singles runs were kind of meh. But he had the Varsity Club first.
Yep.
And then Scott comes in. And then he had just Steiner Brothers just bludgeoning people. And just, it's good, fun stuff. Rick Steiner, number 4.
I got
what about his tag team with Chucky?
I got Ricky Morton again. I told you. You can't beat Ricky Morton. No, for real though, I have Marty Jannetty.
Okay.
Ooh.
I mean, with his great tag team with like Leaf Cassidy.
Yes. I mean the New Rockers.
Yep.
That's anything
96.
Anything new is over.
Anything that's in 1996 is over.
No, but in all honesty though, everyone talks about Sean. Marty is shot himself in the foot many of times, but his in-ring work is damn near impeccable. Like I like watching a good Marty match for sure. He's up there for me.
My number four, going back to 1996, with one half of Smoking Gun, Billy Gunn. I mean, Billy's he's a tag team guy. I mean, there's no better definition. They tried to break him off as a single. It went over like stale bread, and boom, right back into a tag team. And won the tag team titles to three different partners over the course of, what, about six different years? And then I guess if you really count all the way up to 2015.
Yeah.
They won the tag team titles. So, I mean.
Still working tags to this day.
Yeah, I'll say now he's still working tags in AEW to this day with his kids. I mean.
And he's still in great shape.
Really is. I mean.
Well, he's doing like.
He's in his mid-50s,
he's doing
I
like bodybuilding fucking competitions.
Yeah, he's a big dude, and I think that kind of gets lost because they had a lot of big opponents that they went against. But you see him now in AEW. He looks like Andre the Giant compared to most.
Well, everyone said, like, it's. You don't know it until you're next to him. The dude's like 6'5", 260.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I mean, he's a solid. Big dude.
You put Matt Jackson next to him, and he looks like Andre the Giant. so that takes us to number three, Nathan.
Tully Blanchard.
Okay.
At number three. Arn Tully, enough said. Can you really say much more than that? Tully is just the epitome of just great tag team psychology. He's a great promo. Knows how to work the ring. Just he's
Tully and Gino in San Antonio?
Yes.
Number three, Dynamite Kid.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, you watch the Dark Side of the Ring, he's a piece of shit. You watch his wrestling matches, he's not a piece of shit.
One of the greatest of all time.
I mean, the dude works hard, works stiff, works the pace and the style that you see these days. And we've talked about him before on our podcast, but... The guy should get more love than what he actually gets. No one talks about him.
He has the kind of athleticism and speed of 2021 wrestling with the logic and stiffness of 80s wrestling.
He's the prototype of like...
No, it's John Cena.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, he's like the prototype of like early Ring of Honor, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, Ring of Honor, that's like Dynamite Kid.
You watch like, yeah, I mean, Bryan Danielson 2002. I mean, definitely look like... I mean, really, he's the prototype of Chris Benoit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is...
That's why I had Dynamite...
He is Chris Benoit, the beta version, essentially.
Is that why I had Dynamite and Benoit in a previous episode?
Yeah.
For our dream match card?
I will say, as much as I love both Dynamite and Tully, I kind of view them as having too much single success, personally. It's not a knock on either one, but I mean, Tully had the big run in U.S. title, semi-main Starrcade 85 with Dusty. Obviously...
The match with Magnum.
And then you have Dynamite Kid had the big run in Japan before the Bulldogs. But that's not a knock on either one. And that's just my personal opinion. I'm not going to knock anybody for picking those guys. My number three, the one, the only, prototypical baby face of tag team wrestling, Ricky Morton. I mean, there is nobody that's more baby face than Ricky Morton. And just the way he could sell, and it's a formula that's worked from 1982 to 2021. I mean, almost 40 years of Rock and Roll Express, and it still works.
There's no flaws in that type of logic, the way you can get the crowd hype. Like, that is beautiful.
Yeah. The only reason he's not number one is that haircut.
He's my number one.
Yeah.
Is there a reason they call it Plain Ricky Morton?
Yeah, I mean... To this day, yeah, you're a Ricky Morton if you're getting over by selling.
My number two, we've talked about him so much, it's Beautiful Bobby. Is my number two.
What more can you say about Bobby Eaton?
Well, what more I can say is Beautiful Bobby Eaton is my number two as well. And just, like we've said, I mean, he can play babyface, can play a heel. Very, very natural, gifted talent. A guy that just could watch a thing and do it. And, I mean, he worked from essentially early 80s up through about 2000, 2001. And I know he did some indie shots later, but, like, his mainstream wrestling career was pretty much through the almost end of WCW. And just, no matter what he was asked to do, did it well for all those years. And before we get to number ones, I want to see if we had any honorable mentions we wanted to throw out.
Ricky Morton isn't on my list. That's Ricky.
That's because you're a piece of shit.
I am a mud show.
Red ropes loving mother. Anybody else?
I was thinking maybe like Ron Simmons.
Oh, Doom? Okay. Oh, and APA.
And APA.
I was going to say APA.
But I had like nothing else beyond that, to be honest with you.
No, that's a solid Oliver Benson.
Well, right here. I had a couple people that I really had a hard time not putting on the list. One of which being Devon Dudley.
I thought about him.
Because I consider Bubba having too much single success.
I would agree with
that. Oh, yeah, the Bully Ray run.
Yeah, but Devon's definitely a tag guy. I mean, definitely, like, yeah. He is tag team all the way. And I had a hard time with this guy because I don't know if people consider him just a tag guy, but I kind of do. And that is Claudio Castagnoli, Cesaro. I mean, you look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris Hero on the Indies.
Yeah.
In the Fed with Tyson Kidd, with Jack Swagger, with Sheamus. I mean, he's won a million tag team titles, not so many on the single side.
Make a good point.
I had a hard time, like, I almost put him where I put Shelton in that top spot, but it is one of those things where, I mean, maybe his career's not over and he did have a world title shot this year. So I have a hard time putting him as just a tag guy, but. I mean, he definitely could fit.
I'll bring up another honorable mention. What about Chris Sabin?
Who?
Some jobber.
Who is Mike Jones?
Yeah. No,
I mean,
Chris Sabin, Machine Guns.
I mean, he is former Impact World Champion.
Which doesn't count.
Oh. Don't tell Christian.
But or Shelly.
Yeah. I mean, and Shelly, I would argue, maybe fits the tag team guy more. Because obviously he tagged with Kushida and... Mm. He's had some other tag team success outside of just...
Yeah, the early Ring of Honor, Generation Me, was it?
Generation Next.
Yes.
And he was tagging with...
So Jimmy Jacobs?
Not Jimmy Jacobs.
Jimmy Ray?
I want to say it was Jack Evans.
Yes.
Because the stable was Jack Evans, Austin Aries,
yeah.
Alex Shelley, and Roderick Strong.
Yeah.
And then later, Alex Shelley goes out and they... brought somebody else to fill that role, which I forget.
I'd also bring up, you know, Fish and O'Reilly.
I mean, Kyle O'Reilly's also tagged with Adam Cole, also tagged with Roderick Strong. So, I mean... We don't count NXT, it's an indie.
Well, he just got released, so how good can he be?
Yeah.
He's fishing for a job.
Ooh, mate with another zinger.
How about our number ones? Wait.
You all want to say it at the same time?
Let's start at four and count down to one.
Yeah, yeah.
So four, three, two, one.
Arn Anderson.
What? I thought it was Owen and Davey. Owen and Davey.
Fuck this. I'm out.
I'm gone.
Here's my top one.
I had to go with Arn Anderson as well. I mean.
He, talk about epitome of tag team wrestling. While all those other guys are, like, they could all make a case, obviously. You just, the common denominator, you fall back to one guy.
Yep.
Mr. Arn Anderson.
Tag team champion with Ole Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Larry Zbyszko, and Bobby Eaton.
And then you had and then teaming with Flair and Random Horseman stuff.
Yeah, I would say teamed with Flair in a very good match against the Hollywood Blondes on Clash of Champions.
They had a good TV match on a Nitro against the Rock and Roll Express in 96. They had good matches versus Mongo and Kevin Green.
Yeah, I was saying, I think he tagged with Mongo. Someone made Mongo look halfway decent, which is an accomplishment in and of itself. I mean, this is a guy who, I mean, he was the Horseman. As much as people point to Flair as the leader of the Horseman, Arn Anderson was the backbone of the Horseman.
Arn was the glue that held it.
Yeah, you couldn't have had a Four Horsemen without Arn Anderson.
That's true.
And they tried and didn't work. Nope. With, you know, when he was retired.
Oh, he even won a tag title with Roma.
He did win a tag title with Roma. I forgot about that. Yeah, in 93. Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who just is the epitome of tag team wrestling. He had a little bit of a singles run, winning a television title.
But not much to merit one of those singles. You're too big in the singles realm. Because he wasn't.
I mean, it's one of those things. From what I understand, there was the possibility in 94 of doing a Flair-Arn feud for the title, but they ended up going instead with Hogan because Hogan was coming in.
Well, they did wrestle 95, right?
Fall Brawl.
They did. Yeah. But okay. I'm saying,
great match.
the whole Arn being jealous of Flair as the babyface champion through that summer could have happened had the Hogan deal not gone through. So, I mean, had that happened, maybe you could have had a...
There's could be an interesting talk about that a little bit right too? There.
Did we touch on that in our Bash episode?
We did not.
Okay.
But
that could be an interesting rebooking.
That could be something, yeah, that we can see down the road and see how we would have done, you know, Arn Anderson as a singles guy, because we so much associate him as a tag guy. He is him, Bobby Eaton, Ricky Morton. I mean, those are kind of your tag guys.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, I don't think we have much of a better tribute to Bobby Eaton than to talk about tag team wrestling this whole episode the way we have. I mean, RIP, Bobby.
Damn shame.
Yeah, you'll be missed, but never forgotten.
Couldn't say any better myself.
Yeah. So go ahead, get your gimmicks in.
See ya.
Hey, you can watch Silk Stockings on Peacock now, guys. Just want to let you know.
And we're out of time!